Right now it is time for us to be joined by our good friends at theberkshireedge.com. That is Marcy and David, and we take a look at some of the stories, and I do mean just some of the stories that they cover, which is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, because we only have about 24 or 25 minutes to do it. Good morning. Happy post-Halloween, everybody.
Yes.
we survived Halloween. What do you know?
Happy post-election day in Virginia.
Like I said, happy Halloween. New Jersey can be included in there, too. Okay.
Right.
Well, you know, I don't much worry about, you know, I think times are a little different. When you look at elections now and, like, the midterms that are coming up, our population right now is so volatile, and so the things are so changeable, and the news media, national news media, is so intent on breaking news that I don't think that when you look at what happened last night and then you look a year down the road, that's a long, long time. So we'll have to see what develops, but. I didn't lose any sleep over it last night, because basically the Democrats deserved what they got last night, because they're fighting amongst themselves, not even fighting Republicans. Well, anyways, let's get away from that and let's get into some news that you can view at theberkshireedge.com.
And read.
We'll start off with the Great Barrington Select Board, and they... This is a story that's really goes on in every town. They're trying to figure out how to allocate $2 million in Recovery Act funds.
Right.
Every town has a certain amount that they get. And I'm just glad in our form of government that they're going before the public and letting the public have input.
Right.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, it is really, I mean, this is the wonderful thing about living in a small town.
Well, and in New England.
And in New England, right.
Yes.
Right. That the Great Barrington Select Board held a meeting the other day to ask the public what they should do with $2.1 million of, the money from the American Rescue Plan Act. So this is COVID recovery money. And, about 20 people showed up with ideas.
Well, it's similar to, you know, what happens in town meeting, where,
right.
You know, the budget is, the select board and the government is really the agent of the population of the town. And that's what the town meeting is all about. So it's kind of analogous to that. But the, you know, the select board cannot just simply spend it any way they want.
Right.
Get money any way they want. They have to seek guidance from the voters.
Right, because this wasn't covered in the town meeting, since the money wasn't, you know, it wasn't clear that we were having it. So now, you know, the select board spends the year really carrying out the wishes of the town as expressed in the annual town meeting. And since this wasn't expressed in the annual town meeting, they have to figure out, you know, what to do. So they need.
What would the people have wished? What would the people have wanted them to do had they known about this?
Right. Right. Because it's, you know, basically found money.
Yeah.
So we have, you know, very worthwhile. I mean, we have a woman who is asking for the sewer line to be extended to where she lives, I mean, to her road. We have the head of the Community Development Corporation of South Berkshire, which builds affordable housing, asking for the board to consider funding more affordable housing projects. Southern Berkshire Ambulance Squad asking for support for his EMS and paramedic services in Southern Berkshire towns. People, you know, we've spoken before about the Housatonic Water Works, the private water company that serves Housatonic, and so there was a plea that that be used to offset the costs of improving water in Housatonic. This is not the end. I mean, the town is urging people to continue to. And there's a survey on the town website in both English and Spanish, which is going to be there until November 22nd. And the town manager has urged interested parties to complete the survey and tell the town, to open it for more people to tell the town what they, what they think should be done. So
it's interesting when you listen to those, because I'm a believer that this roughly $2 million that they're going to allocate, I think when you look at Housatonic Water Works, that's going to be such a mega expensive project. I think that the $2 million won't do much there. I think they really have to work on putting together a huge funding package from various sources for that, put it all in one thing, where the other $2 million can be spread out to help a lot of people in various places. I know the people in Housatonic don't want to hear that, but that project is going to be so expensive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this $2 million is a drop in the bucket for that.
Right. I mean, that would go probably just towards setting up plans to take a look.
There'll be no visible impact.
No.
Yes. Well, that's been a chronic problem for years.
Yeah.
Because of it. It's a privately owned system whose maintenance is just cannot be sustained by that private ownership model. That's the problem.
It's
a relic.
But you've got so many different organizations that really need the help. And you know what? It's going to take a lot of thinking with state, federal, and town and county officials to put the Housatonic Waterworks where it needs to be. That should just be its own separate package. I want to go on to your next story, because I read this looking at it at your site, theberkshireedge.com, and my eyebrows got raised because I agreed with it, but then there's a part of me that doesn't, and that is the Great Barrington Select Board is considering a measure to bar out-of-town speculators from operating short-term rentals. I think that is something that is worth looking at, but I think also that it will probably bring several lawsuits against the town.
Yeah, that's true.
What this is, so your listeners know, although you can, it's a very interesting story, and it's something that all towns, and big cities actually, are concerned about. And this is the fact that houses are being bought up by speculators and turned into short-term rentals, such as Airbnbs or VRBOs. And we have a shortage of housing. People are buying houses, cheap, and then, they don't serve the local population. They are, they become Airbnbs, and so there has been a proposal, which the town officials are considering, to only allow short-term rentals on properties where the owners are in residence. In other words,
you're renting a room.
It's like an accessory apartment. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can only have short-term rentals on property where which is the owner's primary residence, or on the same tax parcel as the owner's primary residence. In other words, either in your own home or in your own backyard. But not to buy a house, take it off the market for somebody local, and have it available, for short-term rentals.
When this whole thing first came up, and it goes along with Uber and everything like that, I think communities and states have dealt with Uber and Lyft much better. My first thought when people started renting out houses that could be rented to long-term is that these are people now that are basically taking money away from the industry, which has hotels and motels, which have very stringent and expensive things that they have to do when they want. it's not that way when it comes to these these Airbnb and stuff like that.
No, there's no restriction.
And then there is a
rule now that if you take in more than a certain amount, and I don't know exactly what that is, you are subject to a certain percentage tax. But I had an interesting conversation with a woman who was advertising her rental house, not for short-term rentals, but for like 3 or 4 months at a time, seasonal rentals, saying that she actually paid the tax and she went to town hall to discuss this tax, and the people in town hall didn't even know what it was. So she feels that probably no one else is paying the tax.
Yeah, I think what the select board is doing is a great idea. It's almost like an onion. You can peel it back. There's so many different layers that really hurt communities by having Airbnb take over properties. Like I said, it hurts business-wise. It hurts people being able to live in an area that they want to live in. So I think this is a really good idea. But I always sit in the background now in this litigious society that, you know, somebody's going to come up with some sort of lawsuit. You just know it.
I guess. It's funny because I had a conversation yesterday with a woman who is in the process of, an older woman who wants to downsize, and so she and her husband have sold their big house. They've bought a little piece of land, and they're going to build themselves a small house. But there's going to be a year in which they're homeless, and she needs a short-term rental, and she's looked around for a house. Not a short-term. She needs a rental for, at least a year. And so as she's looking around for a rental, she sees that most of the places available are really for short-term rentals, not long-term rentals. I mean, even if you come into the community and you need a house for a year, you can't find one because they're all for short-term rentals. Although she says that now the owners are beginning to realize that the short-term rentals are really a lot of trouble because, somebody comes for 2 or 3 days, 4 days, and you have to have the place cleaned. There's, a lot of wear and tear on your furniture and possessions. And she is finding that people are saying, I'd much rather give it to you for the long term than have to deal with all these short-term renters. So people may be getting burned out on short-term rentals, but, I have friends who come to the Berkshires regularly, and they rent a house for a week or two or even, a long weekend. They love it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's just that, unfortunately, times have changed, and the need for affordable housing for young people and people who don't make a lot of money to live and work in the community has become an acute problem throughout the tri-state region. We have businesses here where people have to travel as far away as 45 minutes to work at a grocery store. It's ludicrous. It's ludicrous. Well, we'll see what happens. I want to move on to the next story because I just love how students get involved nowadays. Monument Mountain Regional High School, the students have organized a campaign to raise funds for a muscular dystrophy disease. I just love the commitment that students have.
Yeah, well, I've known they did this on behalf of one of their students, fellow students. Our former fellow student, Charlie Seckler, who's now in college. But this has been something that they are, that the students have taken on his behalf, which is what's called a Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And I happen to know Charlie Seckler. I happen to know that family because my kids went to school with him, and he's been raising money for years this kind of research on this kind of debilitating disease that he suffers from, and it's so great that the students his fellow students have continued to you know, campaign for money for research on this disease. It shows students have a heart, you know.
Well,
and this was actually initiated by a local businessman, a man named Ross Cameron, who founded something called Warrior Trading in Great Barrington, and he doubled their. He said that if the students can raise $2,500, that he will double that donation. Actually, it wasn't started, but it's being given publicity, right? It is wonderful. I mean that this poor kid has had he's been living with this disease since he was 3 years old. He's in a wheelchair, but he is at NYU. I mean, he's turning 21, and he's a junior at NYU.
Right. So,
but it's wonderful that his community still cares about him.
And you see it in high schools, you see it in private schools, public schools, where students get involved. And it used to be that students would get involved for credit, but now students get involved because they want to be involved. It's totally different. It's totally different, and it's good. It's one of the bright signs for the future. That's what I'll
yes,
say.
Yes, it is. Right.
And everything like that starts on a local basis. You know, it's like that child's lemonade stand, how that now raises millions of dollars each year across the country.
Well, and it's also really wonderful to begin to teach children about philanthropy and public service. And these are high school kids, so they are old enough to understand the importance of what they're doing. I do think it's wonderful because philanthropy is such an important part of American life.
Absolutely. This next story is a problem that faces a lot of different towns, and that is a shortage of parking spots in downtown Great Barrington in the commercial district. And once again, it's a catch-22 situation. Store employees need someplace to park, and they tie up the street-side spots. But the town's got, an interesting idea to start to deal with it.
Right.
Yeah. This has been a chronic problem for Great Barrington.
Right.
They've tried all kinds of things. At one point, they were thinking there was a proposal that never saw the light of day, which was to build a big parking garage over by the railroad tracks, but that didn't fly. People in Great Barrington love to complain that they can't find a place to park. But the newer idea here is that they would designate 8-hour parking spots for employees who are working in these stores downtown. That's the idea.
Yeah, because business owners and employees take up all the spaces, and then people who want to come shop, there's no place for them. So now they have marked spots, or they would like to establish marked spots off of Main Street, with a generous 8-hour limit, so that downtown merchants and employees, and I suppose other people who work downtown can park and leave spaces open for people who want to come shop. So it's very interesting. I mean, there have been discussions about the town meeting. Voted against the purchase of land and the construction of a parking garage or a parking complex last spring. And they're hoping to do this before right away, because the downtown shopping's, the holiday season for Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, and Christmas and Kwanzaa is coming up. We'll see.
All right.
See if people participate.
We're going to change the mood a little bit here, and that is the first ever public performance of Music for a String Quartet which was created when Leonard Bernstein was 18 years old,
right.
is going to be happening on Saturday.
When Leonard Bernstein was 18 years old.
Yes, yeah, he wrote it at 18.
Yeah, it's going to be performed Saturday at the Tanglewood, the Lindy Center.
And it's a fundraiser for
Stockbridge
Library.
Yeah, this is a great idea. And a great cause. Our library system here is the local towns each have a library, and it is a real terrific resource for people who live here. These little libraries are just terrific. And Stockbridge Library is a real resource for that town, and it's a great cause.
Right. that we have people from the BSO. I mean, we have the retired Boston Symphony Orchestra librarian who lives here in Stockbridge. And he and a violinist have been organizing chamber performances in the Berkshires and to benefit the Stockbridge Library. And now this one is sort of unprecedented because they found this piece of music that has never been presented publicly before. And it's being presented this Saturday, November 6th at 7:30 at the Lindy Center at Tanglewood. And also, I mean, I think this may be the first performance in the Lindy Center in the last 2 years, since it's been shut down for two summers.
And I see that Tanglewood is also going to start to present some winter concerts as well.
It's wonderful. Yeah. And this is what we had hoped for when they built that building. And we'll have one because, you know, Tanglewood, unfortunately, even the Ozawa Hall, which is an indoor, you know, which is indoors, has no heat. So, you know, I once went to a fundraiser in Ozawa Hall in October, years and years ago, and it was freezing in the hall.
Once you're sitting, it's not like you're dancing in Ozawa Hall.
No, not like you're dancing.
We have about 2 minutes left, and I want to get on to Nick Diller, your weatherman.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
October was the warmest October in 57 years.
Yes, can you imagine? We have this local guy who at the beginning of every month sends us a report on the weather for the previous month.
And compares it and he keeps these weather records, and they're quite detailed.
Right.
About for every day of every month, and he's been keeping them for many years. And he's a historian of. He keeps the historical record of weather.
He's been doing it for 57 years now.
I remember Nick when he was on WSBS 100 years ago when I first started.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, was he? No kidding.
Yeah.
And doing weather?
He was Tom Jay was the newsman. He was the morning man.
Oh, my gosh. That's right.
And was he the weatherman, or was he did
it? He was just a broadcaster.
He used to do the that's how it's been so long. He used to do those weather things on the air as well on WSBS. I was just a young
pup. So
that's
how he started, actually.
Yeah, right. I was just a young pup. My first real job in radio was at WSBS.
Well, he must be a contemporary of yours because he's been doing this for 57 years, so. He may even be older than you.
Yeah, he is. He's got me beat by 6.5 years.
Yeah.
I got to say that his weather records are really, you know, really valuable. You know what he's been doing. It's quite a resource and a treasure, actually.
He's been doing it a long time. Well, we are out of time. We are out of time.
Oh my goodness!
That
okay.
Fast.
I know.
Yeah.
of course, the BerkshireEdge.com is where you go to find out all these stories and more. Like I said, we just touch upon these stories. But, guys, we'll speak to you again next week, all right?
Okay.
Well, have a good week.
Yeah, and you guys stay warm.
yes, we'll try.
All right.
We have the heat on.
All right. Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye.
The Berkshire Edge on air here on Robin Hood Radio. You find them at the BerkshireEdge.com.